Just a warning before we start, this episode contains descriptions of child sexual abuse that may cause distress for some listeners. If you have been affected by child sexual abuse, support services are available if you want to talk to someone. We'll list some at the end and on the full story page.
Let's try going in just because it's kind of windy. Yeah. It's like making it hard to hear you.
I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story.
This is the church that I grew up in as an altar boy.
On the island of Guam, a U.S. territory in the Marianas Islands, the church is at the center of everyday life.
And I can tell you, the fourth pew where my dad and I would come to church together.
But this community is going through a reckoning that began a few years ago, when report after report started to emerge of child sexual abuse committed by priests on the island.
It feels good that people come up to me and say hi and they thank me. And it just shows their appreciation for what I did by coming out and doing the right thing.
This is the story of one altar boy, his search for justice, and how he helped to bring change across Guam.
And it feels good because it showed that I did something to make a change.
Today, Walter G. Denton of Agate, Guam versus the church. It's Friday, the 24th of July.
So I'm born and raised on the island of Saipan in the Commonwealth of the Marianas, Northern Mariana Islands.
Anita Hofschneider is a reporter at Honolulu Civil Beat, a non-profit news organization in Hawaii.
So Guam is an island of about 160,000 people. It's in the region of the Pacific called Micronesia, and it's the largest island in that region. The indigenous people there are Chamorros, so I'm Chamorro as well. My mom is actually from there. So the island is home to indigenous Chamorro people, a lot of people who immigrated from Asia or other Pacific islands, as well as a lot of people who are part of the U.S. military, because there are a couple of important military bases there. It's just above the equator, so it's quite tropical, can be quite hot. So I spent the first part of this year back home and flew to Guam to cover this story.
So,
are you okay standing in the sun?
We can go over here.
Yeah.
Okay, so where does this story start?
So this particular story begins with a man named Walter Denton.
Yeah, I grew up here. You know, there used to be another door where that window is.
Denton is in his mid-50s. He grew up in southern Guam in a village called Agate. His dad is...
One thing about my dad, he's, he's an American Indian. He lived here in Guam, 50s, 60s, I guess, after the war. And he worked for the Navy. But he loved working for the Navy. So when he was stationed here, he loved it. And he made it his new home.
And his mom is Chamorro.
My dad and I, we used to come to church and I would go with my dad. This is when my mom already left. And my dad was a single dad.
And at the time that he was growing up, you know, Guam was an even closer-knit community than it is right now. In the 60s and 70s, a lot of daily life revolved around the church. And ever since he was a little boy, Walter always wanted to become a priest.
And that was my main focus in life, and that was to become a priest. I wanted to become a Catholic priest.
What made him want to be a priest?
I just felt that was my calling.
Well, he would always go to Mass every week, and he would see the altar servers helping during Mass.
You know, walk up the aisle with the cross, you know, and I just like, I want to do that.
And so at age 8, he started working as an altar server, volunteering as one.
Man, I was focused, you know, and I would memorize every word that the priest would say up there in the altar, you know, and it just came out naturally, came out flowing, you know, like I'm the one giving the church, I'm the one giving Mass.
What did your parents think, or your dad think about that?
Oh, my dad loved it. He He loved me being an altar boy. He supported that.
He worshipped the priests in the parish. And his friends were altar servers too.
Yeah. And Father Tony inspired me watching him and, you know.
He said that his idol as a boy was Father Tony Sabon Aperon, who was the priest in his village of Agat.
Just being an altar boy under his leadership, under his watch, was, you know, was very important to me.
Can you tell me a little bit about this priest?
Well, at the time, Aperon was Walter's theology teacher. He taught at Mount Carmel School, which was right next to the church in Agat. And he was really highly regarded. He loved to sing. He also, you know, was Chamorro, so he was part of the indigenous community. And, you know, people really looked up to him. I mean, people look up to priests in general in the Marianas.
I want you to take recording, so I was like, okay.
You know, just standing here, right behind you, that is where I was raped.
Can you walk me through what happened with Walter and Aperon?
Can you tell me, like, about, like, what that day, was it just, like, a regular day?
Well, it was Friday night when I was serving Mass with Father Tony. A regular day for me, you know.
So, as Walter describes it, it was a normal day, and he was at Mass, and he said he was 12 or 13.
And after Mass, Father said, "Hey, Walter, can you spend a night on Saturday? I need your help for Sunday."
So Walter, you know, said, "Oh, I have to ask my dad."
My dad said, "Yeah, go, because he knows where I'm at." So he would never question the church.
And he says, you know, it was a little bit unusual. He had not done that before. But he wanted to be helpful. He really admired Father Aperon.
Then I came over here. It was probably around 5, 6, you know, it's late in the afternoon when I came down to the rectory to spend the night. And
he remembers having dinner and afterwards,
you know, "Hey, Father, help you with the dishes. I'll put some stuff away." And then that's when I went to the living room and I sat on the lazy boy and I kind of pulled the lever up to just pull it back to lay down.
Wanting to sleep in the living room on a soft sofa chair. And then he says that Aperon said, "No, I want you to sleep in the bedroom with me." So Walter went to sleep in the bedroom.
And I just went straight to bed. I went straight down and lay down. Because for some reason, I was so tired, you know. I was just so sleepy. I don't know. It was weird. But I went straight to sleep, you know.
And in the middle of the night, he remembers waking up with Aperon on top of him.
And my hands were pinned down, and I was screaming, and that's when Father Tony was on top of me, and that's when he was raping me, and I was begging him to stop. "Tell me, please get off me, please stop."
But he didn't, until he was done.
Then he finally stopped. Like he laid down on me, you know. Just laid down on me, and I was like, and I'm just crying.
And afterwards,
it was midnight. It was so dark outside, and I wanted to leave. But I couldn't because I was so scared.
He says that Aperon told him he would give him A's in theology class from that point on.
I'm like, wow, man. You know, hearing some crap like that. And then he said, you say anything to anybody, no one's going to believe you.
What did Walter do after this horrible experience?
He says he was in shock. He was too scared to go home and afraid of what his dad might do.
I knew that if I went home, my dad would have, like, what are you doing here? And, you know, and if my dad found out, my dad would have killed him. No question, no doubt in my mind, my dad would have came down and killed that priest. So I stayed, but I stayed in the living room.
And the next day he was supposed to still help with Mass, but he just couldn't.
I couldn't. During Mass, I just paced around. I just walked around here until Mass was over, and then I went home. But after that, I never came back to as an altar boy.
Did Walter tell anyone about what had happened to him?
Yes, he did.
I did. You know, I went to Father Jack.
He says that he did end up talking to one of his fellow altar servers, and together they approached a priest that they trusted, Father Jack Nyland.
We were walking on the side of the church because he was going to part of the one of the priests that's giving the midnight mass for Christmas, you know. So we're walking down and told Father Jack, says, Father Jack, we have something to tell you. And that's when I said, Father Jack, I said, Father Tony raped me. I said, he raped me. And Father Jack was like, you know, I guess surprised, but and he said, well, boys, priesthood is a lonely life. Quote, unquote, you know, something you never forget.
And at that moment, Walter realized nothing else could be done.
I said, man, he's not going to do anything. No one was going to do anything. Not even the elders. She couldn't tell anybody. This is unheard of. This is something like you just don't come up and go tell your grandma and your mom, you know, because they worship these guys, you know.
You know, he had a hard time telling his parents. He couldn't bring himself to tell his parents because at the time, priests were so highly regarded in the community that he felt that to say anything bad about them, it just felt impossible.
You know, back then was a whole different time.
This idea that Walter had, that priests were untouchable, it is a common one in many abuse stories around the world. Just how embedded was religion to life in Guam? How important was it to the people there?
It's hard to describe just how important the church was and continues to be on Guam. It's been centuries since Guam was colonized by Spain and the community was forcibly converted to Catholicism. And over time, religion has become interwoven with Chamorro identity for a lot of people. And that tie between the community and the church was strengthened during the war, during World War II, because by the time World War II happened, Guam was part of the United States. But during the war, Guam was invaded by Japan. And for nearly 3 years, the Chamorro community was subject to a really brutal occupation. Children were raped and women were raped and babies died and people went hungry. And a lot of people turned to the church to give them the strength to get through it. And when they survived, they believed that Zeus, which is the Chamorro word for God, had saved them. And so the Chamorro community that Walter grew up in was one that had a lot of gratitude and reverence for the church.
So this experience with Aperon, what effect did this have on Walter's life?
He stopped going to church.
It was very hard.
He struggled to pay attention in school.
It was hard for me to go to school. It was hard for me to sit in the same class that he taught. I used to sit in the front or in the middle, but I got up and I moved to the back. Every time he would say something, or I just think, I zone out. You know, it's like I'm there, but I'm zoning, I'm somewhere else, you know?
And he felt like his dream of being a priest had been taken away from him.
That was hard, man. He took away my dream. He took away my lifelong dream. That was my dream of becoming a priest.
It's interesting because by now, Walter has told this story many times, but even still, you can hear the emotion in his voice as he talks about what his life as a priest might have been like.
And I tell you, man, I wanted to come back here, become a priest here in Iowa, you know. And I always joke around. I said, yeah, I would have had the baddest church, man. You know, I always joke around like that. I would have the baddest church. We have movies, man. We have disco nights, you know. That's me. I would have been a fun priest. Because I love children. I love kids. I love family. I love life, man. And I always tell people, I said, life is short, man. You live every day, you know. And I try to do that.
Okay, so Walter had always wanted to be a priest, but he felt like that had been taken away from him. What did he decide to do?
So he left Guam. Like a lot of Chamorros on Guam, he joined the military.
You know, being in the military, I was away from the island. So I left in 82.
He became an army sergeant, and it was many years before he would run into Father Aperon again.
Here's a good story. So it's not a story, it's just real. I actually, through my whole career...
Next, Walter takes on Aperon and the church. How did that happen? How did they run into each other again?
So it's the early 2000s and Walter is in his mid-30s. It's been about 2 decades since he's last left Guam and last seen Father Aperon.
You know, being in the military, I was away from the island. So I left in 82.
So in the early 2000s, Walter was stationed in Fort Lewis, Washington.
And one of the guys, I lived in base housing, and I went to go get some like lawn equipment because the military provided that for you. And one of the guys happened to work there.
And he said he met another person who was from Guam.
From the accent, I said, hey, you're from Guam. He goes, yeah, man, from Guam.
A Chamorro man.
And guess what? He was a relative of Bishop Aperon. Hmm.
And a few weeks after meeting him, this guy told Walter that actually Aperon was going to be visiting.
He's coming here. You want to come and meet him? I looked at him like, yes, I would love to. I will be there. Gave me his address, his phone number. He told me he's going to be here on this day.
He says he didn't want to pass up this opportunity to confront him about what had happened, which he did.
I said, man, I said, someday I will meet him. Someday I will confront him. And that day came. And I, you know, so I get goosebumps, you know, because I got to meet him.
Okay, so this is many years later, thousands of kilometers away. How did this confrontation go between Walter and Father Aperon?
So Walter drove down to the house of Aperon's relative.
And I was like literally the first one there. So eventually he came, and when he came in, I was standing in the kitchen area, between the kitchen and the living room, and he walks in. And I just looked at him, you know, and then I went outside, went to the very back, and I just stood there and I folded my arms and I just waited. You know, I just waited for him, and he came out, blessed the food, and he started meeting people, and he started going down, you know, working his way to the back.
He went straight up to Aperon and said, hey, do you remember me?
That's when I went up. He came to me and I took my hand out and said, how you doing, Archbishop? I said, do you remember me? You know, I said, do you remember me? He said, Michael?
At first, Aperon called him Michael, the name of his brother.
Oh my God, he's talking about my younger brother. He used to be an altar boy. No, it's me, Walter. I said, do you remember me now? And I started to raise my voice, and his eyes got, oh crap, you know, like he's seen a ghost. I said, I want to talk to you now.
And so they ended up going for a long walk where Walter confronted him over everything.
So we walked away from the house, down the sidewalk, probably a good hour. And I told him how I felt and what he did to me, what he took away from me, you know. And I cried. I broke down.
What did you tell him about how this has affected you?
I told him he took away my dream. He said, you took my life away. My life of becoming, of being a priest. That's what he took away. I didn't want to join the military. I wanted to serve. I wanted to be the best priest that can possibly be on this island. That's what I wanted. If I could turn back the clock, I'll be a priest.
He says that Aperon apologized. He asked for forgiveness.
That didn't do nothing. I was so numb, I was so pissed, I was so angry.
But when they got back to the house, Aperon took out from his satchel a picture of Mother Mary, a CD of Aperon singing,
and a picture of himself. And then he gave it all to me.
And offered it to Walter as an apology.
He said, this is for you, Walter. And, you know, I'm here I am, I'm like, are you serious?
Walter says he felt like the apology did nothing to quiet the anger that was inside of him.
I said, this is not over. I said, this is not over. I wasn't finished, you know? There's something for me that was not finished, that I had to finish. That I had to come back to Guam and I didn't know what it was.
He still wanted some kind of justice.
So Walter has this really dramatic confrontation with his abuser. What does he do after that?
In the years afterwards, he ended up retiring from the military. He was still working for the army, but in civil service. And by the time 2015 came around, Aperon had really risen through the ranks of the clergy on Guam. He had become the highest ranking Catholic official in Micronesia, Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Agana. Mm. And in 2015, Walter ended up flying back to Guam for a funeral. And the funeral was actually at the church in Agat that he had gone to as a child. Mm. So when he was there, he was with family next to that old church in the rectory where he was abused. When he overheard his cousin talking to a friend about how Aperon had sexual relations with students who were studying to join religious orders.
Mm. I imagine that would be a sickening thing for Walter to hear. How did he react?
He says that hearing that made him so angry that he blurted out in front of everyone that Aperon had raped him.
Wow.
It struck a nerve, and that's when I first came out and told everybody, like my immediate family right there, that I was raped. And that's when you could literally hear a needle, a pin drop. That's how quiet. They just, like, they're all in shock because they didn't expect it from me. And I said, no, I was raped. I was raped by Aperon. I said, in that house right there. And I said, and I looked and I said, that's it. That was the day that I decided to come out. I said, I'm coming out.
And that was when he says he decided he would finally expose Aperon and go public about what he had done.
Okay, so what did he do?
So even though this was many decades later, it was still unheard of to accuse a priest on Guam of sexual abuse, particularly someone as powerful as Aperon.
It was just me against Goliath, you know. I'm David, he's Goliath, and I was going after the Archbishop of Guam, and I didn't care, you know, because I'm tired of feeling, I'm so tired of being hurt. I'm so tired of crying, and I want something done.
Later that year, Dunton ended up writing a letter to the Vatican detailing his alleged rape.
Mm.
He got in touch with people who were really frustrated with Aperon for a lot of other reasons. Although Aperon was popular, he had made a lot of enemies in the church as well. People who were frustrated with how he spent money and who he hired and fired and the decisions he was making.
Mm.
So at the time, there was a fracture within the church, and Aperon had a lot of critics or people who were discontented with a lot of the leadership decisions he was making. And so those people ended up getting in touch with Walter and finding other people who had been allegedly raped by Aperon and convincing them to go public and organizing a series of press conferences where they could describe their trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Good afternoon.
He came out. He spoke publicly and described what had happened to him.
I was raped by Anthony Sablon Aperon, who at that time was a priest in Agate, and whom I trusted. I worshiped the ground he walked on. He was like a father to me. So I thought he was the priest that I wanted to be. But he took all of that away from me. For 38 years, I have carried a heavy burden. And this tragic incident that I experienced totally changed my direction in my life and what I wanted to be. My name is Walter G. Denton of Agate, Guam. Please forgive me for what I'm about to say. It hurts so much. It hurts so much just thinking about it. It's like it just happened yesterday. Though that whole year from coming out was so hard. When I gave my press conference, it was just so hard. You know, it's like every time I tell my story, it's like I'm just reliving it. I'm just thinking, I'm going back and just seeing what he did to me. It's like, and it's like I know every detail of what he did. You know, it's like it happened yesterday.
There are other Agate boys who have experienced the same thing that I have gone through. I only hope and pray that justice will be served to this man, to this individual who did this to me and other young, innocent boys. Thank you for your time.
What was the reaction when Walter and these other abuse survivors spoke out?
He said it was like a bomb going off. His allegation would help set off a chain of events that has since revealed hundreds of sexual abuse cases across multiple decades on Guam. Nearly 300 sexual abuse lawsuits have been filed against nearly two dozen priests on the island. One of those was Father Nylon, the priest who Walter had confided in after his alleged rape.
Okay, and what happened to Aperon? Was there any fallout for him?
My dear faithful, maniluhu mangilizano.
Aperon denied forcefully the allegations and ended up leaving the island.
As you know, there has been a series of attacks against myself and the Catholic Church in the past 3 years. As predicted, just 4 days ago, these malicious ads have now resulted in a false accusation of sexual abuse.
No criminal charges have been brought against him.
I will continue to defend the faith and give my life for the truth. Thank you, Sisus Maasi.
But the Vatican held a canonical trial and ultimately exiled Aperon from Guam, stripping him of his title as archbishop.
What do you mean by a canonical trial? What is that?
A canonical trial is an internal trial within the Catholic Church. Its proceedings are usually secret, but we found out the decision, you know, from the Vatican ultimately when it was completed. Pope Francis denied the priest's appeal of that decision and securing his banishment from the island.
Mm.
He's now the subject of multiple civil lawsuits alleging sex abuse and hasn't returned to Guam, to my knowledge. but he still receives a $1,500 monthly stipend from the church.
So wait, despite being the subject of multiple sexual abuse lawsuits and being exiled from Guam by the church, they still support him financially. They still accept him as one of their own in some way.
Yes, he's technically still a priest.
He doesn't deserve to wear the cloth of God. He doesn't deserve that. You know, especially someone who rapes children. He should be nothing, you know?
This is an incredible amount of cases to come forward in a relatively short period of time. How did the church react to this? How are they dealing with this?
Well, as lawsuits mounted, the church was forced to declare bankruptcy on Guam. Mm. They've identified several church-owned properties that they plan to sell to be able to resolve those.
Has the church done anything to create a broader cultural change?
So they have. They have since appointed a new archbishop.
Archbishop Michael Burns. Here in Guam, they want me to be Archbishop Michael Jude Burns, because you need more than two names.
I went to visit him on Guam at the Chancery, which is his office.
What did he say to you?
He says that when he arrived on Guam, the church was in turmoil.
Some people say, well, what was it like when you first came here? I said, I felt like I was being helicoptered into a live fire zone because everybody was, you know, trying to find a center.
Aperon had recently left the island and the finances were a mess.
And so we took a couple of different ways of trying to bring some kind of justice to those who have been abused. For us, what we talk about is bringing the greatest measure of justice to the greatest number of people.
So what has this new archbishop done, though, to change this, to fix this culture?
By now, he's trained more than 3,000 people, including priests, teachers, and catechists about child abuse and their responsibility to report abuse if they suspect it.
And, you know, we've broken the culture. Hopefully we've broken the culture of silence.
He says he's optimistic about providing justice to the people of Guam.
How do you kind of re-engender that trust with people after even all these lawsuits come out?
Well, you know, maybe just say a little story. When I came here, when I met with Pope Francis before I came here, he said, you know, so what are you going to do? I said, well, Holy Father. Holy Father is, he knows sports. You know, he's a club member in one of the Argentinian, you know, one of the Buenos Aires football leagues. And so anyways, so I just told him, I said, you know, Holy Father, when a team isn't working so well, what do? You go back to fundamentals. So I all my homilies are about Jesus. It's because that's the fundamental. If we're not in personal relationship with Jesus, then none of this really makes sense.
But what can't be understated is the way that the whole situation has affected the community as a whole, because they're so deeply rooted in the Catholic religion. There have been people who have left the church and people whose trust have been irreconcilably broken, people who have tried to find other ways to celebrate their Chamorro culture that are really separate from Catholicism. And in some ways, it's encouraged this new cultural renaissance on Guam among younger people who are trying to find, reconnect with Chamorro culture before colonialism. But there are a lot of people who still attend church, especially among the older generation, and even among people who have been victimized by the church, who still believe in it, who still go.
For me to come back to church was, I had to trust, not the church, but the people who give the Mass.
Walter, for instance, still goes to Mass.
It took me a long time to get my trust back in the church. The church is just a building that houses the priest to, you know, it took a long time for me to, you know, just to believe. And Burns is actually the one who actually restored my faith, you know, somewhat.
But he recently went to a service with Burns where Burns was being recognized officially as Archbishop, and he feels like that helped reaffirm his faith.
And I found closure somewhat because it's, you know, Burns is in, he's here. He's here to stay. And like I told Burns on that Sunday afternoon, and I thanked him and I said, Archbishop, I said, you're the last piece to end of my journey. And seeing him officially being the Archbishop of Guam now, that was the end of my story right there.
He says that, you know, on one hand, with Burns there, he feels like he got some kind of closure. In a way, his story is over. But at the same time, the fact that Aperon has been exiled from Guam isn't enough for him. What he really wants is an apology and to see Aperon defrocked. He wants to see a proper trial. He doesn't want to settle his lawsuit.
I want that so bad. And I tell that to everybody. I said, I'm ready.
Right now, all of the cases are in settlement negotiations, to my knowledge.
I'm ready to face him. I want to see him in court. I want to see him looking in my face.
He wants to be there when it goes to court and to see Aperon again.
I'm waiting for that day to come where I can face him. I want to meet him one more time.
But the church, the Catholic Church, has still not settled their cases, but they want to. They're working on settlement. So it's unclear whether or not Walter will ever get that day in court.
Okay, Anita, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
You know, and people ask me, how you doing, man? I'm blessed. And today I'm blessed because I'm standing here and I got to witness the changes that not just by myself, but with the help of all those involved. And I'm talking about the supporters, the people who went out there and did the picketing in front of the church, you know, helped me make the changes here in Guam. So being blessed, I'm blessed.
According to a report from Pacific Daily News, the payments for former Archbishop Anthony Aperon were halted earlier this month. This decision came after survivors of child sexual abuse on Guam expressed concern, stating that these payments are contrary to justice and a continuation of the abuse they suffered at the hands of the clergy. That's it for today. If you have been affected by child sexual abuse and are feeling distressed, support services are available 24 hours if you want to talk to someone, such as 1-800-RESPECT. You can also look up organisations like the Blue Knot Foundation and Bravehearts, which we've linked on the Full Story page. Thanks to Anita Hofschneider for her time. You can read her reporting on this at theguardian.com, and we've included a link on the Full Story page. This episode was produced by Ellen Lee Beta and Joe Koning. Our executive producers are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. Okay, catch you next week.